die, Father, is nothing left. Ever since I was a child, I had the feeling that something is missing in me. I want to know why I am here. Can any of us know that?
Become yourself. Then God and the devil don't matter.
I want to learn. I want to understand. Be careful. Can you find the force to enable these two quite opposite lines to live together in yourself? At any moment, the wolf can devour the lamb.
And you must learn what it means to become responsible.
This is an exact knife. And that is why you are here.
To the unknown future. This is Red Ice Radio. For the Seeker.
Radio based out of Sweden on the Scandinavian Peninsula. My name is Henrik and we are pleased to have you with us. Today we're having an open and laid-back conversation with investigative journalist Susanne Posel from OccupyCorporatism.com, an alternative news website dedicated to exposing the elite and their plans to globalize money, governments, and people. We'll just head straight into it. All right. Hi, Susanne. Welcome to the program. Good to talk to you. And thank you for coming on, first of all.
Thank you for having me. I'm very honored.
Excellent. Thank you, Susanne. OccupyCorporatism.com has some great stories, and it's always nice as well to see a woman being involved and interested in these kinds of topics. It's always encouraging. Why don't you tell us a little about why you wanted to start the website, Susanne, and when that happened?
Well, in about 2 years ago, I was watching a documentary by Niles Ferguson about the banking crisis, what happened in 2008, and it just hit me like a ton of bricks. I'm like, God, the fiat, it's fake. And that just spun me out. I watched every documentary. My husband and I just, every book we could find, every article, every website. Once we realized that everything was fake, everything was up for grabs. You know, who knows what's real and what's not? And so we spent a year just voraciously consuming all of this information. And, you know, I've got two small children at home and that I homeschool. And I thought, oh my God, these babies are going to grow up in this world. And it's drastically changed from when I was a child. And I realized I couldn't just sit back and not do anything. So I said to my husband, well, you know, I want to start a website and I want to start writing articles and showing people the research that I'm finding. Because every time you look at something in the mainstream, it's completely spun. So you have to break it apart and dissect it and analyze it and figure out what exactly is going on, and not just what they're not telling you, but what they are telling you. Sometimes they'll just flat out tell you what's going on, but you have to understand the context of everything and go back in history and relearn everything. It's like going back to preschool and relearning your ABCs.
Yeah.
So I started writing articles. I think because I'm a woman, it gave me a lot more exposure, because there aren't a lot of women in this movement, and I don't pull any punches, and I don't not cover something, because I feel like everything is important. Once you realize, like I said, that it's all fake, everything is up for grabs, and so we have to relearn everything that we were taught, because it's all a lie. So I immediately got picked up by a lot of the major alternative news sites, and my articles were reposted, and most of my articles go viral all over the internet, and I've made some wonderful relationships, business relationships and contacts in the industry, and learned some things about the industry that I don't particularly like, So I've disassociated myself with some of the people in the movement. I realize there's a lot of infotainment in the industry, and I didn't appreciate that at all. It's one thing to disseminate information. It's another thing to terrify and scare people, because the one thing that we need is information that inspires people to action, and that's something that is lacking. So I've come kind of full circle, and I have my own radio show on American Freedom Radio, the Region 10 Report, which is broadcast 1 to 3 Pacific time on Thursdays. And I found a really good home over there at American Freedom Radio. And then I just, I publish articles 6 days a week. I take Sundays off because I need to.
You have to have a day off. That's right. Oh, yeah. No, otherwise you'd go cuckoo, I think. And especially in these subjects where it's a lot of heavy material to trudge through and really get through things. I mean, I'm bad at writing overall, but I couldn't even imagine, you know, so I couldn't even imagine doing that part of it. But nonetheless, it's important. We do take some, time off and perspective. And I feel that that's maybe one thing that's actually lacking for a lot of people. It's to gain that kind of perspective on certain things, if you will. If you're so involved in something, and I'm not saying that that's negative. We all need that period of really, as you did as well. And I went through the same thing, Susanne, of really just like, you're going through absolutely everything. You're soaking up everything, and you're like a dry sponge, you know. And you need that period. But then after a while, you need a little bit of a pause. You need a little bit of a something that gives you perspective, so you can put things into context. And I feel some people are just they're going, and it becomes almost like an obsession in a way.
Right, and you can become paranoid. You know, a lot of my readers and listeners tell me, "Oh my God, when is it going to happen? They're going to bust down my door at any moment." That's why I call it the infotainment. You know, it's a show. A lot of radio hosts and a lot of websites sensationalize for the sake of getting clicks to their website or selling the goods that they have on their website,
sure,
or becoming famous or popular. And that is the antithesis of this whole movement. We don't want people to be, you know, looking out their window afraid that the cops or whoever is going to bust in their door. We want people to be inspired to change this world, because if we don't, it's just going to keep going and going and going until you're a slave. And then there's nothing more to take, like what Bill Cooper said.
Yeah, no, and you're right. And the question is, how is that different from anything that the regular media is doing? It's just another spin on things, but it's the same outcome. It's the same kind of scenario at the end. You have to, you have to get on the bandwagon to be scared into submission. And I many times have also, when I'm so much involved in researching something or particularly following the news, if you will, the alternative news, you're right. It feels like someone is going to come and kick down the door in a minute, and then you. If you actually step away from the computer, go out into nature somewhere, you're just like, where is all this actually happening? It's not happening here where I am, you know? It's sure, it's isolated events around the planet in different parts of the world. But when we you know, congest it and do it like everything on one place like that, and we get all the information, we're connected to that global level. I wonder how healthy that actually is for the human being, and if we're capable of taking that story after story after story. I think it's increasingly important just to kind of step away from it, actually.
Absolutely. I take a break. I spend time with my children, spend time with my husband. We don't have a television anymore. We got rid of that about 8 or 9 years ago. But that was because we were living and working on a small organic farm in Colorado. And we got in touch with, you know, the cyclical part of nature, and we realized that being advertised to on a daily basis, most of these things you don't need. I mean, mostly everything you don't need. And what you do need, you'll go find it. You'll go buy it if you need it. You know, you run out of something, you go get it. So we have this overall natural perspective on things just from having been, you know, in nature and dealing with plants and animals living with the cycles of you know, getting up in the morning when the sun rises and tilling the land and then going to sleep when the sun goes down and that whole cycle. It was beautiful. And so it complemented, actually, when I woke up, I realized how important that is to get back to that whole natural existence. you know, where you eat when you're hungry, not because it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon or lunchtime or noontime. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Because you're supposed to.
Yeah, that's right. Getting in touch with the real clock cycle, if you will, of your body. I wanted to ask you as well, Suzanne, why you think that there are so few women into this, at least on the broadcasting end on it. I don't know, audience-wise, maybe there's more, 50-50 going on there, but on the broadcasting end of things, there are fewer women. Why is that, do you think?
I'm not sure. I mean, women are nurturers. And, you know, like I said, I have two small children, and that motivates me to do this. I don't know why. I guess because there's so much vibrato. You know, the men are very angry and loud and boisterous just by nature. And it makes for good radio. And that goes back to, you know, I'm kind of using this phrase. A friend of mine in radio said this to me in a broadcast I did with him. So I've kind of adopted the infotainment word, because it just so perfectly describes it. It's entertainment. It's a show. And I guess women are not as boisterous as men are, but I come from a very honest background in my family. We're not afraid to tell each other what we think, and we don't offend very easily. So I don't have a problem being honest and telling people what I think. And I think that that I'm a woman doing it, there's a sort of appeal to that. And I try to work past that to actually get the information out. Once it's interesting that there's a woman speaking to you as if as a man would, but then you get past that and you say, oh, wait a minute, okay, she's saying something that's very accurate and very informative. Just like with my articles, I put in as many source links as possible so you can see, read the actual document, go to the actual website and read their documents. Some of these documents I PDF in the articles are huge, and I would hope that people read all the way through, but I understand, you know, it's kind of arduous, and sometimes the document itself is very boring, but when you know exactly what's happening, you can understand how to change it. You know, when you understand exactly how they're doing this, and you know, not like, you know, you get a hold of their playbook kind of thing, that but when you study this and research and go along and then see the application in real time, when you go back to read the news that's happening today, you say, oh, wait a minute, I know what they're doing. Then we can plan on how we're going to combat this, how we're going to stop complying with this, how we're going to affect change in our community locally, and then, you know, nationally, and then hopefully globally. So that we can take, you know, it's only about 1,000 or so people who are really the puppet masters here. It's not a large group of people. They've got a lot of lackeys. They got thousands and thousands of them. But the guys up at the top, this is a very small group of people. So if we work at the bottom and work our way up, they're not going to be able to do this, because there's 7 billion people on the planet, almost 8 billion now. And so if we all just stop complying with their system, what are they going to do?
I can't do anything at that point. Nothing at all.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what I'm hoping for.
Well, exactly. That's a good point. I mean, I go back and forth on this all the time. But in some cases, it's like, okay, you have to be engaged. You have to do something and say something. And other days, I'm just like, no, I don't have to engage in it at all. It's just about me actually stepping away and not being participatory in the system that I don't agree with, in the way that it's being run and you know, basically run over me. So it's a matter of just stepping away, and that's what I believe most days as well. But I mean, you're right, Suzanne. I think the first level of all of this is to become informed and realize that there is a problem, and let's face it, there's still a lot of people that hasn't even achieved and, you know, come to that level yet. So it's essential of all these websites, you know, that are out there that still supplies information to wake people up. And then, of course, when you're a little bit into the process, then it's a matter of, okay, where do you go now? What do you do? Do you just stay in the same position and just consume all the news and become like a vessel for all these problems and issues, or can you, you know, kind of funnel your frustration a little bit into some area and you know, affect something or change something in your own life.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I've been working with Vinnie Eastwood over in New Zealand, and he says it perfectly. You know, you consume this information, and then you realize, I don't want to be a consumer. I'm just, it's another aspect of the system. It's another program. It's another mind control.
That's right.
That's why we've started Guerrilla Media. This is a concept that Vinnie had back in 2007, and I've helped him realize it. So we've partnered up, and it's realguerrillamedia.com, and we are now putting together a one-stop shop where you can find radio hosts, artists, musicians, journalists, filmmakers, every aspect of the alternative media, the people who have not been co-opted, the people who are not interested in being famous, the people who are actually trying to change our world in whatever fashion that they're bringing to the table. And we've got we're amassing a huge lineup of people and putting people on the website so that when you go to realguerrillamedia.com, you know that these people are sourced and vetted. They're not trying to sensationalize. They're not trying to fearmonger you. They're trying to educate you and inspire you to do something because we can't do this alone. You know, you and I and Vinny and other people like us, we need everyone's help. You know, we got into this mess because we quit paying attention. Now that we are paying attention, now we have to take the next step and actually do something. So the more people that actually get up and start doing whatever it is, if it's talking to your neighbors, if it's starting your own blog, if it's writing music, if it's making artwork, if it's writing books, whatever it is, if it's having your own radio show, at least you're doing something to try and change this. If you're out in the street, if you're handing out flyers, if you're organizing real grassroots effort to change things, like Dan Johnson over at Panda Unite, I work with him. This boy is 19 years old.
We just had Dan on, by the way, so good timing there. Yeah.
Oh yeah, He's amazing. I have so much respect for this young man. 19 years old, and he has done so much to not only bring awareness to the NDAA, but to affect actual change on the legislative level. I am so proud. He's part of Real Guerrilla Media, and I have him on my show every couple of months just to do a recap of everything that's going on. I think people like him are what we need. We need to inspire more people to do that. And I've been involved with a couple of other younger people, Alex Scheer, who wrote some open letters to Obama, and he is actually just came back from Seattle and spoke at the anti-NDAA in front of the legislative, the state senate. He went and spoke, and then he spoke at a peace rally. This is amazing to me. These young people, you know, I'm 35. So these young people, I am so inspired that they're actually affecting change. So realguerrillamedia.com is this place where no matter who it is, no matter what genre it is, no matter what you're interested in, you will find people that are honest and trying to change our world. And I think that that's what's lacking in the alternative media, unity, that we're in this together.
We have a couple of things we want to get into here, Suzanne, and we'll get into it. And I just want to say as well, I'm a little bit under the weather today, so you have to excuse me for struggling with some of my words here on the secondary language as it is. But I thought, first of all, Suzanne, we could talk a little bit about the website name, Occupy Corporatism, and also take your take on the Occupy movement. And I guess we could go into the quality, I guess, of the activism options, if you will, that are out there in the world today, and how you view all of this, Suzanne.
I chose the name because everything is incorporated. We don't have countries anymore. We have corporations. We don't have cities or towns anymore. We have corporations. It's no different than Target and Walmart. Your city is incorporated. I just did an article that is extremely important here in the United States. All of our police departments are private security firms. They're corporations that are private security firms. And they've been hired by your city or town in order to secure the city. No different than if you had a private piece of property and you hired a gentleman from Wackenhut, a private security officer, to secure that property. And this is something that people don't realize. Police officer, in the way that we think of a police officer, is gone. They are private security firms, no different than DynCorp or Blackwater. Now, they're not, you know, necessarily mercenaries, but they are not interested in upholding the law. And so when I realized that everything is incorporated, including the fact that human beings through birth certificates have been incorporated, then there's a straw man. I realized that we needed to occupy corporatism. We needed to say, no, we're human beings. This is a planet. I don't have to justify my existence because of a piece of paper. I exist whether or not that piece of paper exists, and that piece of paper does not define me. And it doesn't define me on any level, whether it's individual or as a resident in a town or as a citizen in a city or as a citizen of a country. It doesn't matter. I exist. I am here. Aside from, you know, homicide or suicide, I'm going to be here, our natural causes. And so I don't think that our system, the way that it is on the macro or the micro scale works at all. And so that's what I meant when I said occupy corporatism.
Very good. Now, one point you mentioned there as well about the police and all that. I mean, if you think about it, the very existence of crime is a prime tenet for the police to be in business. It's ridiculous to think that that the police ever would want to eradicate all the crime, since this is how they, you know, this is how they pay their, you know, car loans and mortgages and everything else. And it's a relationship there. This system is built on that kind of everyone needs each other to perpetuate itself. And true change is something I've noticed that people actually don't really want, because that means that things become obsolete during the way, and mankind would have to look to new areas of new industry or new jobs or something like that. But I've noticed most people actually don't want that. They want things to just remain the way they are, it seems like.
Exactly. They become comfortable. They realize on some deep level, I think all of us realize that we're rats or hamsters in a wheel. But they just want to be left alone. And that's a terrible way to exist. Oh, just leave me alone. I went to my job. I did what I was supposed to do for 8 hours. I came home. I just want to eat my dinner and watch my TV and go home and go to bed and leave me alone. were we designed to be that? No, I don't believe so. This idea, I had Max Egan on my show recently, and this idea, it's something that has stuck with me my whole life. It's a curiosity to me, but it's becoming more and more important. The fact that who I am, who's looking through these eyes, has never changed. Whether my body was four years old or now 35, whoever's looking through these eyes is still the same. And so I am part of this. I am participating in this, but I am participating in this. It is not my end and be all of existence. And so if I'm going to have an experience, I want it to be the most incredible experience. It doesn't have to be always the happiest. It could be the saddest. You know, there's good, there's lessons in everything, in the opposites and in the pros and cons. But still, who I am never changes. And so I think that if we maybe took a minute to try and grasp the concept that whatever is looking through these eyes in all of us is something separate from what's going on outside of our body, then maybe we would come to some sort of understanding that none of this matters. It matters because somebody said it did. And whoever that person is, maybe they were wrong. And maybe something else matters. And maybe we should go start looking for that. But I agree with you. Most people, they want to go to their slave job. They want to come home and eat their McDonald's and watch their American Idol and go to sleep. And by all means, just, you know, leave me alone mentality.
Yeah.
And I think that's so tragic.
Well, it is. And it's also a very good point. I think one of the biggest lies is this kind of, well, today it's a corporate version of what the government has convinced us that our experience on this planet should be like. I think that the very essence of a human being is something that, you know, learns and grows as we experience things on this planet. And we do this through both love, of course, but also through loss and tragedy, you know, difficult things. This is things that makes us grow. But the version of the life that we're being told, or the version that's being sold to most people, is absence of this of tragedy, of anything that's difficult. It's all about comfort and availability, and just here you go, you know, easy access to everything, whatever you want, just click on the remote and it's done for you, kind of thing. And this is, mm-hmm. I think that it's an intricate part in the control system. Actually, they've realized this on some level, that if we can stop people from growing, effectively turning them into grown up children, we can control them like nothing else. And that's the world I see. It's that idiocracy kind of world that's you know, happening, unfolding right now in front of our eyes.
Absolutely. I just watched this documentary called Stupidity. And, you know, even though it's funny, it's very tragic. We have an entire society that looks up to stupid people, stupid things.
Yeah.
We laugh every time someone gets hurt. And even within the circles, the dumber someone is, the higher they get in their little hierarchy. And so if you could just be the biggest idiot possible, at least you would have people looking up to you. And even if you were a nobody, you know, then at least you would have people who admire you and look up to you, because you're the guy that always makes them laugh, who always bumps into everything and breaks everything and is really dumb and stupid. That's why the Jackass movies are so popular.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. I mean, look at it. The movies coming out of Hollywood and the tribe down there. I mean, the characters are getting more and more stupid all the time. And the morals of the story is always, it doesn't matter how stupid you are, because you will get the money and the girl at the end of it anyway. It's actually because you're the most stupid that you got it, kind of thing, you know?
Yes, that's why Adam Sandler is so popular.
Oh, God, can't stand that guy. Jesus. Yeah, it's really bad. It's very bad, but it's selling more than ever, right? It's reeking in the millions.
Right, when I was a kid, I was a nerd, you know, I was a geek. I would go to the library on the weekends for fun. My mother would drop me off at the library and I would read books. And I used to stay up all night and read a book. I mean, I would read like a 600 or 700 page book in one night.
Well, sometimes congratulations for having that ability to do that. I wish I did. Yeah. I read as much as I can and as often as I can, but not at that speed, at least not English.
Well, I don't read anymore. I mean, I read articles and I'm busy writing and I'm reading documents, but I haven't read a book in like 2 years.
Isn't that funny how you, when you get into it and you do research and studies like that and you know, things that like you and me are involved in, you don't have time to read as much as you'd like. It's crazy. It just, the time vanishes. It's yep.
I don't have time to read. I don't watch television unless it's a cartoon for my kids. But it's very hard to find things that they can watch, because the cartoons have completely changed. Even, you know, from when I was a kid, it was kind of violent. We had G.I. Joe and stuff like that. But nowadays, forget about it. You can't watch it. We show our kids Looney Tunes, you know, from the 40s and the 50s and 60s, or Fred Flintstone, at least, you know, we know there's propaganda in that, but at least we can deal with it, you know?
Yeah, it's on a level where you might be able to combat it. But most comics today, I haven't looked in, as you said, comics in a lot of time either, but I couldn't even imagine having a young child in this world and having them grow up with all the media and everything as it is. So yeah, you're brave for doing it. But congratulations for homeschooling, by the way, something that's I mentioned many times now, but it's banned in Sweden, so we can't do it here. Oh. You know?
Yeah, I went to a couple of elementary schools in the area that my son would have attended. And I spoke with the teachers, and I'll just tell you one story. It was the anniversary of the day that we signed the Declaration of Independence, not the Constitution. And the teacher said, "Oh, yeah, I heard about that. I think I read an article about that on MSNBC. I said, "Well, are you doing anything to celebrate our constitutional republic today?" She says, "Oh, no, we're building mosquito nets because Bill and Melinda Gates are over in Africa trying to help the children. And it's a global world and yada, yada, yada." And yeah. I was like, "Oh, yeah." I looked at my son and I said, "Run." Run for the hills.
Indeed, indeed. Oh, wow. Yeah, isn't that crazy? And we're in the globalist kind of society that we're in right now. It's almost like we're being asked to neglect whatever is happening locally, because there's always someone else in the world that has a bigger problem than you do. So just be happy and be fortunate for where you are, because there's people starving in the world, you know? So, yeah.
Yes, my mother always told me, eat all your food because, you know, there's starving kids in Africa. And now that I know why they're starving, it's not because of lack of food being produced. It's because people are restricting access to food.
Yeah.
That's according to the UN Population Fund documents themselves.
Government.
They've got control of the food, and so they don't let other people eat it.
And governments are subsidizing farmers in different parts of the world, so it costs less for them to produce food and ship it down to some of these African countries than it costs for them to actually produce their own food right there locally. So that's, you know, that's the smartness of government involvement for you right there.
Yeah, I've written a lot of articles last year about the African land grab, that the UN's been grabbing land, forcing the people off the land, burning down their homes, killing their wives and children, and then handing it over to corporations like Coca-Cola, and going and the British Survey Society found huge water aquifers, so they had to grab that land because the people can't be on top of the land. They got to drill for it. You know, they got to get all this fresh water and secure it. And then the funny thing is, like in East Timor, they just I just wrote an article about how they have massive amounts of oil in East Timor. And ConocoPhillips was given a contract in order to siphon all of that gas, that petrol, out of the earth. And the people who live there, they got so sick of being treated horribly by a de facto government that was put into place by the UN in 2007, that the people just rose up. They had nothing left. They had been beaten and they called it a mutiny. And so in the mainstream media, they call them rebels. They call them, you know, rebel terrorist groups. No, these are indigenous people who are just, they have nothing left to lose. So they're just fighting for their land.
Yeah. Yeah, it's incredible. Now, Suzanne, who should we blame, do you think? I think this is an interesting question. There's two ways to look at it, as always, probably more as well, of course, but we can cover the two basic ones here. Either we're in a situation where people are stupid enough to buy the Coca-Cola, which perpetuates the company, or should we blame the companies itself and also consequently then maybe ban them? Should government come in and regulate and tell who can do what or whatnot? Well, how do you view that question?
Everybody is at fault. Everyone's at fault. Corporations' purpose is to make money. Corporations have become conglomerates that don't care whether or not there's flame retardant in your Coca-Cola or your Gatorade. They don't care whether or not there's aspartame in your milk. They don't care whether or not there's BPA lining the products. They don't care whether or not there's any chemical that would destroy your genetic makeup or cause cancer or cause... they just care about the profits. Now, I understand a lot of people don't know. I've been saying for a long time, there's flame retardant in your fizzy drinks and there's flame retardant in all of these products. But they're like, no. Well, finally, Gatorade came out and said, we've removed the flame retardant. And I said,
oh,
I told you.
Great. Yeah.
For someone who doesn't know any better, you know, there's a lot of talk in our industry about sheeple and how, you know, I've stepped away from that. If you don't know something, you can't be held responsible for it. In my house, there's a motto that we tell the children, once you know better, you're expected to do better. And before then, I'm not going to hold you accountable. You didn't know. And like you said, there's a lot of people who don't want to hear it. They just want to go to work and come home. And I understand that. It's a hard life. And it's even harder when you realize what's actually going on.
But there must be a drive and an interest in wanting to know about yourself, your surrounding, what you're putting in your body. I mean, where's responsibility in all this then?
Each one of us has a choice. Absolutely. I don't eat fast food. I eat local and organic food. That's my choice. Before I went to live and work on that organic farm in Colorado, I didn't know much about nutrition. I didn't understand what the nutrients and the vitamins and the minerals do for your body and how important they are and how important they are in their raw form. You know, even when you steam vegetables, you lose 40% of the nutrients.
Yep, that's right.
How supplements are mostly synthetic and your body rejects it automatically. So you're buying all of these supplements, but you're really not getting anything. How important it is to spend at least 30 minutes out in the sun and let the vitamin D from the sun hit your head and get into your body. How milk is a complete mythology. Our body does not process vitamin D or calcium through milk. Your body processes it through raw cheeses and raw milk, because when you pasteurize something, you cook it,
yep,
and you kill all the nutrients in it.
They've been going after raw milk for how long now? You know, it's I think
finally, big time last year.
Oh yeah, exactly. I think wasn't there a few states in the U.S. that actually eased up on the law against raw milk now? Or did I hear that wrong? Do you recall any of that?
I don't recall that. Unfortunately, I hope that there are, but now they're going after the Amish. They're going after, you know, every. When we were on the farm, we drank raw milk, and at first I was very scared. It wasn't until I learned, you know. So that's why I say, you know, people who are not, you know, quote awake, they're not sheeple. They just don't know. And for us to get angry and frustrated at them, it's ridiculous. It's like getting angry at someone who speaks another language and doesn't understand what you're saying. If I'm talking to someone who speaks another language and I'm trying to convey something to them, I have the duty to learn their language so that I can communicate with them. It's not the other way around.
I think it works both ways, though, to be fair, actually. I agree with you up to 50% of that, and then if there is a relationship here at all, then you know, you both takes one step in one direction, if you will, or towards each other, so that they can enter into have a relationship. I think that absolutely it has to do with the fact that people are being dumbed down. It has to do everything with the education system, that all the
yes,
natural you know, interests that we have as a young, you know, human beings are basically eroded away. They're taken away. They're frowned upon. They say, nope, you shouldn't do that. Just read, follow the, you know, regurgitate the stuff, and everything will be good. So that's, you know, I understand that level of it. And at the same time, you know, I have this feeling that, well, many people also they fight you, although they recognize that they don't understand what they're talking about. But they're defending the mainstream line, and they can almost end up in an argument with you because they are convinced that they know better than you. I don't know if you've encountered these kinds of people, but it's very interesting that there's no humility there. They're not humble over the fact that there are other opinions in the world. It's the mainstream line, and that's it, kind of thing. And it's very frustrating. And it's almost like then, well, do they really deserve to know this when they're like fighting you on it? Don't even have an open mind and an open heart and say, huh, interesting, I haven't heard about that. Tell me more, or where can I find out more about this? You know, it's like a violence there that is trying to keep you out and keep that knowledge out in a way.
That's the training. That's the beauty of the brilliance of propaganda and the training of society that the people, the powers that be, have been able to accomplish. It's mind-boggling to me. I had a conversation just the other day. I was paying my phone bill, and the woman behind the register was telling me about how close-minded people are, and how this bakery didn't want to bake a cake because the couple was same-sex, and they didn't want to be part of that, and how they need to have an open mind, and how their opinion wasn't worth anything because they didn't agree with her opinion.
Well, exactly. It's one-way tolerance.
Yeah, and I pointed that out to her. I said, well, isn't it interesting? Having an open mind doesn't necessarily mean that the people agree with your opinion. It means having an open mind. And she stepped back, and I saw the light go on in her eyes. She was like, oh. I said, well, you know, I don't agree with the Ku Klux Klan. I don't agree with their ideology. I don't agree with anything they have to say, but I want them to have the ability to speak, because if they take away their right, they're going to come and shut me up too.
Yeah, absolutely. Very important point and part of all of this as well, because people are very quick to jump, as we were trying to get to earlier, in terms of the banning and the regulation, because I see no matter how well intended it might be, or from whatever good intended person it might come from, but this idea that we should ban things that we don't agree with or shut them up because we don't like to hear what they say, all of this is at the end of the day leads to a fascist system that is restricted. It's everything that is opposite freedom. And either we have freedom, and if we do, we are going to hear things and see things that we don't like, that we don't agree with, but that's just the way it is.
Right. That's where political correctness came from. It came from an ideology to stop people from talking about things.
Yeah.
And so we buy into it. And so, you know, you're a racist. Everything's racism now. You know, if you don't agree with something, you're a racist.
They shut down an argument so quick in some cases because of that. Those silly ideas, or it's anti-Semitic, or you're a bigot or whatever. So, yeah.
There's a little thing on pbskids.org. I let my children watch those cartoons. But when you get to a certain point on the website, it says you have a choice. You can either choose A or choose B. It's your choice. And I say to my kids, that's not a choice. That's an option.
Yeah.
They are manipulating the word choice. Choice means I can choose from anything I want.
Or come
means
up.
I could go to another website.
Yeah, exactly. Or make one myself. Come up with my own choice, you know?
Yes. And so it's this manipulation of the language, which is how we communicate, how we understand each other. It's a manipulation of ideas, things that don't mean something, but you attribute a definition to it and you keep repeating it over and over again. I've got children. I say the same thing every day over and over again and they don't get it. And one day they will. I know it. I believe in it. But they do the same thing. Like you said, it's arrested development. Yeah. On a massive scale. And our every society breeds arrested development so that we remain infantile in our ability to understand things.
Exactly. And again, just goes back to this idea of what has been created for most people today, at least in the Western world, I would say then, is this idea of a comfort zone, if you will, that nothing will happen to you. No one is going to be able to say anything that hurts you. Government is going to take care of you. We're going to pad the sharp corners so you don't fall and hurt yourself, or you know, bruise your arm or something like that. And it's and in this environment, again, no matter how well intended that is, that might even come from a position of, well, we want to help you truly and really, but this is something that stunts development when you're not challenged, when you're not. When you hear things you like all the time, when are you ever going to exercise your own opinion or what you think about things? You have to be challenged. That's just the basic bottom line. Everything in nature works like that. You have to, to be able to run fast and get away from the predator, if you will. You have to you have to get training to that, and you have to do it. Otherwise, you'll become an easy target, and that's where we're at right now, I think.
Yes, on a global scale, we are easy targets because we're afraid. Oh my God, if they take this piece of paper away from me, how am I going to get my stuff? How am I going to pay my bills? If they take my home away from me, where am I going to live? Oh, well, I'll just stand in a welfare line. I'll just go and sign up for a social program and get food stamps. Yeah, a couple of generations ago, that was not heard of. You grew your own food, and whatever you couldn't grow, you bartered and traded for whatever you didn't have on your piece of property. And you learned a skill, and you contributed to your community. That's why we get carpenters and locksmith and all this other, you know, things. And they've taken the idea of environmentalism and unity and just twisted it into this slave mentality where you are dependent on your government, regardless of what country you live in.
Yeah.
You're dependent on your government to give you the sustenance because you can't even sew a button on. You go and buy a new shirt. You know?
Yeah.
Most people don't know how to change a tire. And I'm guilty of that, actually. My husband is a mechanic by trade, so he does all the work on the car, and I'm guilty. I don't know how to change a tire.
Well, but see, but that's a good point, though. It means that we don't have to do everything because there are people around us that can provide that service, and you help them with something, and they help you. That's how things work. So you don't have to know everything. That's the basic idea of society, right?
Yes, that's what I learned on the farm. Everyone had their skill, and we had interns that came on the farm, and some of them didn't know anything about farming, and they learned. Some of them did. Some of them knew about this, that, and the other, and we would hone in their skill. After about 3 weeks of living and working with someone, you really get to know them. All the pleasantries are gone. The honeymoon is over. and you work with their skills. You bring them up. Because if they are uplifted, it just makes everything work better, and the task gets accomplished, the function is complete, and that's really the end goal, right? At the end of the day, you got to make sure that everything was planted and everything's taken care of and everything's good before you go to bed. Yeah. And as a society, we should do that. But no, we live in these little houses, these little boxes, and what's mine is mine, and we don't help anybody. God forbid, you know, somebody needs a dollar, we say, get a job. I hand them a dollar, even if it's the last one in my wallet. Because, you know, I don't know. A couple of years ago, probably about 5 or 6 years ago, I got involved with some work with DV shelters. And there was one woman who was a drug addict, and she needed some money, and somebody gave her a couple of bucks, and she went and got high, and it ended up she ended up in the hospital. She ended up ODing or getting something that was bad, and she is now talking to people who have drug addiction problems. And I went and listened to her speak, and the part of her speech that affected me the most was she had to get to the point where she had to break down before she could move on with her life and stop being dependent on this substance in order to make her feel better about herself. Yeah. And if there was no one around to help her when she hit that bottom, she wouldn't be where she's standing. She would be dead. And that to me is the epitome of this little piece of the conversation that we're having here. If we don't help each other out and care about each other, then we're done for. They win. The divide and conquer, the us against them, the this is mine and that's yours, and you can't have what's mine, and I'm only going to give it to you if I get something out of it, that all has to stop. That doesn't work. That's not what we were designed for. It feels good when you give. It always feels good when you give, regardless of whether or not you get back. I always smile every time I give something to somebody.
I think you're absolutely right. I think the most important thing about this also is the voluntary aspect to this. I don't think it's virtuous, for example, by the government to steal from all the other people to give it to others. That's a that's a bad version of all of this. I think it should be. Everything should be on a volunteer basis, that you, it should come from the honesty from your heart that you want to do this. And I think, I mean, it's been compared. I think I've heard Jim Morris talk about this many times, and he talks about, you know, that Americans are some of the most generous and giving and charitable people in the world that there are, because for the longest time, Americans have had a low, you know, tax on people so that they have room to do these kinds of things. I think because I've seen the reverse of this in Sweden, where we are highly taxed, we are incredibly under the gun by the government, if you will, and they regulate everything, is incredibly tight, and I have never seen a people that are so closed off and so cold and so unwilling to help each other. No one says please or thank you, holds open the door for you or anything like that. I mean, even if you do, like I try to do, you never, not that I expect it though, but just as a observational thing for our listeners as well, I very seldomly hear something back like, oh, thank you, that there's even a recognition of you. So the virtue that the government has to come into the picture and take from you to give to others, I see how that completely have destroyed humanity. And I also see at the same time that countries around the world are looking to the Swedish model. They're looking to a higher tax to solve some of these issues. I'm seeing America going in that way. And I think it, honestly, I think it's the exact opposite way to the solution. This is going to lead to a lot of problems, and that's only what I see. I could be wrong though, but this idea that the government takes and then gives to others and that that's, you know, charitable work. I think that's all wrong. It should be based on voluntarism completely.
Yes, and if we're allowed to be what we are naturally, we do give. We are generous. What's mine is yours. It's always that way. You know, I'll go back to the farm. We grew a certain amount of things and we bartered and traded for other things. And everyone was always happy. You know, I have tomatoes, you have raw milk. So I'll give you a box of tomatoes and you give me a couple of canisters of raw milk. And everybody was happy. And yeah. I don't understand why we can't do that on a grand scale. I do understand why. It's tragic to me that we don't. You know, I have two children. I have a boy and a girl. And I have a little brother. And I know what it's like to share, even if you don't want to. And I encourage that with my children to share. Because, you know, when it comes down to it, I tell my son is the older one by 4 years. And I tell him, someday you're going to need her. And it's true. Someday you're going to need the people around you. Someday something's going to happen and you're going to want to make a phone call and talk about it. And you want to make sure that you have somebody to call. And someday you're going to need help. Everyone comes to a point in their life where they need help, whether it's financial or emotional or whatever. And we have to make sure that we've built those relationships so that when we need something, we have it. Because it's important. We need to be the person that we want other people. My husband's always interested in being that guy. He's always the guy that helps everybody out. He's always the guy who takes time out of his busy schedule to go next door and help them fix something or you know, because he's a mechanic, he'll fix somebody's car. And he's always doing things for other people because it makes him feel good to be that guy. But whenever he needs something, there's always a situation where we have to say to people, thank you, but we already have. We have more than what we need. We have an abundance. Whenever my husband needs something, there's always thousands of people or hundreds of people that are willing to help out. And that is a mindset and an ideal and a social meme that needs to come back. I think it needs to come back.
Very good. I like that crow in the background, by the way, Susanne.
Oh, thank you.
Sounds great. That's a great, you know, ambiance to the conversation. But
well, they are messengers.
Yeah, they are, aren't they? I think all birds are. All right. Well, we're having a very interesting conversation here with Susanne Posel from OccupyCorporatism.com. We're going to take a short break here at this point. We're going to continue with more. There are some things we want to try to get to. We're having a very, very enlightening and you know, good conversation, of course. But there are a couple of points which we want to try to get to here in the next segment in terms of the neocons. There's a couple of things we want to talk about when it comes to revolutions around the world that have been fake, pretty much. Susanne has done some great work and research into this, and we'll get into that later. But before we end for the first segment here, then, Susanne, please give us your website again. Give us out any other details if you want, how people can tune in and listen to your program, whatever you want to give out.
The website is OccupyCorporatism.com. I post 6 days a week, like I said, and I have a radio show on American Freedom Radio. It's the Region 10 Report. It's on Thursdays. Syndicated globally, not just in the United States. You can also access it on the website, AmericanFreedomRadio.com. I also have a website where I archive all of my shows at radio.OccupyCorporatism.com. You can follow me on Facebook or Twitter. I have an RSS feed. And you can also, I'll put a call out to anyone who is a journalist, a radio host, blogger, YouTuber, musician, artist, author. We're looking for you at therealguerrillamedia.com. You can go to realguerrillamedia.com, and on the More tab at the top of the right-hand side, you can click on Join Us or Contact. And there's an application form. Fill it out and email it to me at admin@OccupyCorporatism.com. And we're looking for you because a lot of the alternative media has not done its job. So it's time to replace it with the guerrilla media.
All right. Very good. We'll have the links up on redicecreations.com so you can head over there and check it out for yourself, of course. So stay with us, Suzanne. We'll be right back with more after this short break.
I've been cheated by everyone. I've been cheating myself. I've been cheated by everyone. And everyone's been cheated by me.